Welcome back to Mountain Money. Joining us as our first guest is Christopher Collard. I just found out he's called a spreadsheet whisperer. That's curious. Christopher, you're joining us from the Utah Foundation. First, let's start with what the Utah Foundation is.
So the Utah Foundation is an independent, nonprofit organization that focuses on public policy research. So we research issues right now. A lot of our reports are focusing on taxation, healthcare, and education here in Utah.
And I'd just like to give you guys a shout out. If anybody out there is a data wonk, policy wonk, Utah Foundation puts out some really great reports. How many do you put out a year?
It depends on the year. This year is going to be very productive, and we're probably going to see more than 10, somewhere between 10 and 15.
Yeah. So if you ever feel like, you know, you're wondering if you're getting the straight report from the media, go to Utah Foundation and they will have really interesting research on things that really affect public policy. You've done a three-pronged study on taxes. You've done property tax studies, income tax studies, sales tax studies. We're here to talk about sales tax today, but if you can quickly just summarize what you guys found out with income tax and property tax in Utah.
So property taxes are one of the oldest taxes in Utah, and they used to play a very strong role in funding Utah's government. However, over time, that role has decreased in the 1930s with the institution of the sales tax and the income tax. The income tax in Utah the income tax burden in Utah is high compared to many other states, and part of that is because it's used to support education, and here in Utah we have a lot of children to put through the education system.
I thought property tax supported education.
Property taxes support local entities. So a good portion of property tax does also go towards education, specifically at districts, while the income tax focuses on the state level support of education, like funding for the what's called the weighted pupil unit, which is just the big block of funding that goes out to schools to help support student education.
So let's talk about how sales tax works in the state of Utah. So I mentioned when you go to a restaurant, you're going to pay sales tax. When you buy a car, you're going to pay sales tax. When you buy your kid a Christmas present, you're going to pay sales tax. What about services? Does Utah tax services, and broadly, let's just talk about what is encompassed with sales tax here.
Okay. So sales tax primarily applies to kind of what you said is personal property, which essentially is anything you can drive away with or walk away with. Sales tax also applies to any rental of personal property, which can kind of be seen as a service, as well as any sort of maintenance or repair of the personal property, like car repair or maintenance. Sales tax will apply to those transactions as well. Sales tax also applies to a number of other services, including admissions for either sports events or ski resorts or other sort of amusement parks as well.
So it does get confusing. Like if you take a yoga class, I believe there's no sales tax on something like that. And so it seems like sometimes there should be tax and there's not. And sometimes it seems like, hey, this should not be taxed. Like you just mentioned, car repair. The labor charge on my car seems like a service and maybe it should be exempt from taxes. But I believe it is taxed. Is that correct?
Yeah. So it is taxed because it's related to your personal property, your car. However, if there was service provided on like your house, which is real property, like a plumber or electrician, the labor charges would not be taxed.
I thought an interesting distinction in your report is my ski rental is taxed, but my ski lesson is not taxed.
Right.
Yeah, and let's talk about why that matters to the state of Utah. You know, there's always this debate, we need to raise taxes because costs have gone up. And from my standpoint, a lot of the things that taxes are based on are indexed with inflation as well, right? The price of car, I mentioned you buy a car, you're going to be taxed on that. Well, cars are a lot more expensive today than they were 10 years ago, so the state gets additional income. So it seems like a lot of those things are indexed and the state should be keeping up with inflation and probably doing better than inflation. But your report says that I'd be wrong on that.
So our report, we looked at sales tax revenue. If you account for inflation and population growth, the state is bringing in essentially as much money as it did back in 1978. I mean, so over the past 4 years, it's gone up, it's come down a little bit, but essentially it's the same amount. And so that wouldn't be a problem if all the services that the sales tax generally, all the services that the sales tax provided for also matched inflation and population growth. But two of the biggest things that the sales tax goes towards is higher education as well as Medicaid. And so it's pretty common knowledge that both healthcare services and higher education services, those both of those increase much faster than your standard rates of inflation. And so that's the primary reason you're seeing decreasing purchasing power for the state.
And we're also, healthcare plays into that as well, because Utah doesn't put a sales tax on healthcare services. Healthcare has gone up. More families are putting more of their family budget towards healthcare, which means they're buying fewer things. So they're not paying the sales tax on the fewer, they're not paying as much sales tax as they're buying fewer things. But healthcare services are not taxed.
Right. And so that kind of plays into a long-term trend. When the sales tax was first instituted back in 1933, about 52% of everything people bought was a good and was taxable. However, today only 32% of kind of what people buy are goods or services subject to the sales tax.
So what's the fix? In your report, you guys present a couple of solutions about how Utah can get back to more of its power with its sales tax revenue. But before we get to the fix, let me ask a first question. There are about five states that don't have sales tax.
Right. So often in those states that don't have sales tax, you'll see high taxes in other areas that kind of compensate for that. For example, Alaska has high severance taxes that they rely on like the extraction of the oil industry.
I have a friend who has a house in New Hampshire that he rents out, and the rent pays pretty much just for the property tax every year on that house.
Right. Other states, you know, rely heavily on the property tax or on an income tax that, to try and compensate for that. Utah takes a kind of a three-way approach, relying, you know, almost equally on property taxes, sales taxes, and income taxes to support government services.
So your group does studies on multiple forms of taxation, kind of where we're at, what's working, what needs to be tweaked, makes suggestions. What about evaluating the efficiency of how the state is actually spending the money that they're receiving? Do you guys have an opinion on that? Have you done research on that?
So that's not something we really included in this report. I do know that some past reports have looked specifically on education funding and how efficiently that's being spent, administration costs versus other costs. But that's not something we really looked at in this series of taxation reports.
Okay, well, let's go to Renee's point, which is, you know, what are some of the recommendations that you're suggesting for the state?
So if the state has decreased purchasing power, it kind of faces about four options. Number one, it can kind of scale back the services it provides. Two, it can find an alternate source of revenue. And kind of in the past, that's what the state's done. Previous to 1996, all of higher education was funded from the general fund, which is provided from the sales tax. However, the state, you know, Utahns passed a constitutional amendment that allowed some of the income tax to be used towards higher education. So there now about 70% of the revenues that the state puts towards higher education now comes from the income tax. So they found a way to help the income tax help support the sales tax like that. So the state can continue doing other things similar to that. The other options the state has is to raise the sales tax rate, or it can expand its sales tax to apply to more products and more services.
And you go through the pluses and minuses of all of those, specifically expanding the sales tax to apply to more services. And you talk about the problem when it comes to taxing services. For example, my friend Doug here is a financial advisor, and right now the service he provides is not taxed.
Right.
But if the state decides we're going to start taxing that service, then I might look at, maybe I don't use a financial advisor in Utah. Maybe I look and find one in Arizona, because we can do consulting and advising over the phone or over the internet. Doug, I'm guessing you would not like that.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. It shows how challenging some of these suggestions are to implement, and why it's important that the state looks at this very carefully. And I think the state does. I think, you know, when we talk about adding a new tax or raising an existing tax, that's something that the politicians take very seriously. And none of the politicians want to be the person that introduced the bill to raise taxes. Although there are other ways to increase state revenue that people don't see as directly as a sales tax or an income tax, what are some of those?
So there's a number of different forms of taxes. I guess one way is, what exactly do you have in mind? Like, what are you thinking of?
I'm specifically thinking of like fuel tax,
okay, so,
gasoline.
Fuel tax is, again, it's almost a form of sales tax. You're paying taxes on the purchase of gasoline, and it's not like there's often a little post on your fuel pump that essentially tells you how much of your money per gallon is going towards that. But yeah, often other funds are kind of moved around to help pay for that. I know the state is considering, or the state will ask Utahns during this election what they think of increasing fuel taxes, essentially to kind of shuffle some money around to help pay more for education.
Yeah, and then there's other sources of revenue that I don't think we'll ever see in the state of Utah. For instance, for a lot of states, the lottery is a big source of income for them. I don't think we'll see that. So those were kind of the out-of-the-box things that I'm thinking, and particularly with the fuel tax. You know, when the price of oil dropped in half, at least on the crude oil side, and our price at the pump got much more affordable, I think that was a chance for a lot of states to increase the tax and for the average consumer not to feel the pinch.
And so it was about 2 or 3 years ago that Utah did, in fact, raise the motor fuel tax rate, and it also linked it to the rising costs, so that as costs go up, it won't, or like as cars get more, or as inflation goes on, it won't be decreased by inflation.
Let's go back to the foundation of sales tax. Right now, Utah's sales tax is what?
Utah's sales tax is, like, in terms of the money or?
The percentage.
The percent. So the state sales tax is 4.7%. Every county and city has an additional amount that they levy. It's 1.25%. And so that brings it up to a kind of a base that applies everywhere of 5.95%. Then there's an array of local taxes that each city and county can choose to enact if they want to. For an example, Moab has the highest rate at 8.6% because they adopt a lot of these local taxes. And Park City actually has the second highest rate at, I believe it's
8.45. Yeah. And just for comparison's sake, Heber is 6.25. Colville is 6.55%.
Right.
So those local taxes do make a difference. And here in Park City, we can add the resort tax.
Exactly.
Which some of these other communities like Moab, Bryce, Escalante can also do.
Mm-hmm. And so you actually see like a lot of the resort communities will actually use sales tax because a lot of the services these communities provide are, you know, provided towards tourists. So it makes sense to have these sales taxes because those are the primary taxes that tourists can also contribute towards state services.
Are we seeing Renee's hypothesis playing out that folks will shop different venues? The example you used, if they tax investment advisory services, you could use a different state. I think the numbers you just shared on Heber versus Park City being 8.45, Heber being 6.25, that's a big difference. That's over a 2 percentage point spread on an absolute basis. Do you see consumers saying, I'm going to go shop at the Walmart in Heber as opposed to the Walmart in Park City because taxes are less?
So I don't know about the difference between Heber and Park City, but on larger trends, you definitely see that. You know, during several parts that are during in the history, the state has had a problem with people going to Idaho to purchase large transactions like cars or tractors and then bring them across to the state. And so the state's found a way to deal with that with cars, because then it just requires that you pay a sales tax when you register the car here in the state. But in other circumstances, yeah, you do see this sort of people will travel an extra mile sometimes to get a little bit more of a discount on their sales tax when that's something that matters to them.
And right now, I thought this was an interesting point in your report. You call Utah's sales tax, as it currently stands, a regressive tax because the person at the lower income pays a higher percentage in sales tax than the person at the higher income. And the reason for that, if I understood it correctly, Christopher, tell me if I'm wrong. The person at the higher income spends more money on services and affords more things that do not have sales tax associated with it. And your report says that the Utah sales tax burden is about $23 for every $1,000 of personal income.
Right. So the burden itself is $23 for every $1,000 of personal income. So every $1,000 you earn, on average, $23 of those dollars goes towards the sales tax. It's about average across the state. We're roughly right in the middle in terms of the sales tax burden, but it does tend to be more, it's a regressive tax because lower income individuals pay a higher percentage of their income in sales taxes. So while higher income households might generate more sales tax revenues because they're buying more things, they're buying fancier things, it's a smaller share of their total income. And so that's definitely a concern that legislators think about in terms of the sales tax when many impoverished families have a hard time and it hits them particularly heavy in terms of the percent of their income that they spend on sales tax.
Yeah, let's talk about one of the big ones on that, which is the taxation of food at a grocery store, not a restaurant. But I know a lot of states have exemptions for food at grocery stores. Utah does not.
So Utah has a partial exemption. It's only, instead of being taxed at the full rate, Utah's food is only taxed at 3%. Like you said, probably even the majority of states have a full exemption on food and sometimes even other necessary items such as clothing. Other states might offer a tax holiday on clothing during back to school times. Idaho, our neighbor to the north, they offer, instead of offering an exemption, what they sort of offer more of a rebate, kind of that they combine with their income tax returns, that you can kind of get a rebate that low income households can get a rebate on the sales tax they spent over the year.
Your report addresses value added tax, VAT, which I remember in Europe, VAT, everyone hated VAT. Mm-hmm. What is VAT and how could that be a solution to this?
So the VAT is a value added tax. Instead of the consumer, the end consumer paying the full value of the sales tax, the sales tax is more compartmentalized. So if we look at a business, a manufacturer is going to purchase raw materials and someone else is going to extract those raw materials from the ground. So the manufacturer would pay a partial sales tax on the value of those raw materials that he takes. And then as that manufacturer takes those raw materials and refines them, the next purchaser, the manufacturer that makes a final product, is going to pay a partial sales tax on that. And then as the retailer turns around and sells it to the consumer, there's another partial sales tax combined. So it's a partial sales tax taken at every step as these goods trade hands.
Oh, so isn't that tax stacking though?
Well, so tax stacking is it's not quite tax stacking because it's only a partial taxation. Right,
gotcha.
Tax stacking is where every stage of the manufacturing process pays the full amount of the tax.
So I have a lumber mill, mm-hmm. and I'm selling it to you. You're going to cut up the lumber. You pay me a tax for that lumber. Then you sell it to Doug, who's going to make a wooden toy out of it. He pays a tax on it, and then he sells it to the store. They pay a tax on it. They sell it to the consumer. The consumer pays a tax on it. That's tax stacking.
Right. And so some states have a form of sales tax that's called a gross receipts tax, and that's essentially what happens. Hawaii is a great example of that, where each level of the manufacturing process is taxed as it goes from raw lumber to processed lumber to a manufactured toy to being sold. A VAT is considered by economists to be more efficient because it only taxed the value added at each stage, so it's only partially taxed at each stage.
And do you guys have a position on that? Do you think that's something the state of Utah should consider?
So often when the VAT is considered, it's considered at a national scale. Most states do not really consider the VAT. We've only found two examples of states that have actually adopted a VAT in Michigan, and they adopted it twice and repealed it twice. So it's not clear that that might be the best solution. If the state does want to go in that direction, we recommend that they take a hard look at that.
Even at the national level, and for a lot of folks, they might be listening to this thinking, well, that's pretty benign. That sounds reasonable. Maybe we should do it. The reality is it generates a ton of tax. And once a country goes to the value added tax, they very seldom go back because they just can't. It becomes such a significant source of revenue. Do you agree with that?
So that's not something we necessarily looked at in our report. Often when the VAT is being discussed on a national scale, it's being discussed as either a partial or full replacement for the income tax.
Let's talk about exemptions real quick, because that is something, thanks to industries and lobbyists and politics, exemptions to taxes become a big deal. Mm-hmm. Your report mentioned one industry that we actually just had Nathan Rafferty from Ski Utah on the local news hour talking about how we had the sixth highest skier visit season in Utah's ski history, which is pretty impressive given the fact we didn't have much snow. But the ski industry, the tourism industry, very important to the state of Utah. Now the number two economic impact in the state of Utah, and now supersedes the extraction industry, I think, when it comes to bringing in dollars to the state of Utah. So there is an example in your report of how there is an exemption that favors the ski industry. And that is there's an exemption on electricity purchased by ski resorts for ski lifts, but not electricity for other entertainment and leisure venues such as amusement and water parks. Mm-hmm. So put us in the mind of the legislator. Why would they say, I'm not going to charge a sales tax on electricity for ski lifts, but I am going to charge electricity for Lagoon?
So there's a number of reasons that the state legislator might add exemptions.
To entice businesses to come in, yeah?
Yeah. So often it's for an economic development purpose. Often they'll do that. One focus is they discuss sales taxes, as the legislator discusses any form of taxation. They're always cognizant of the comparative strength or weakness when Utah's compared to other strengths. They're very cognizant of the fact they don't want to raise taxes too much, that it makes Utah businesses uncompetitive when compared to other local or other regional places. So that's something very much on their mind. Many of the state's exemptions are exempted because they are seen as business inputs. And so generally economists think that, you know, to avoid this tax stacking, business inputs shouldn't be taxed, and just only the tax should be levied on the final consumer. And so many of the exemptions we have, many of the exemptions we have here in the state are kind of justified under this idea of not taxing business inputs. And it might be that the way that the electricity for ski resorts is kind of seen as a business input and should be exempt under this ideal of that many economists propose. But at the same time, exemptions can create inefficiencies in the system because electricity is still a business input for amusement parks or water parks, but it's not exempted for them. In other cases, some exemptions are too broad, where many people benefit that don't necessarily need to benefit from the exemption. I guess one example might be the partial exemption on food. It's given primarily to help low-income people be able to, you know, just ease the burden on them a little bit. But even high-income households, where that's not a significant portion of their income, still benefit from the broad exemption.
You know, this brings up a really good point. You know, Renee's talking about an exemption for electricity at the ski industry, but not for Lagoon or water parks more in general. When you guys write these reports that are extremely well done, and again, the name of the report, if people are interested, is the Everyday Tax Sales Taxation in Utah. And the author of the study is Christopher Collard, who we're talking with here. He's a research analyst at Utah Foundation. When you guys think of your constituents, you know, who are you hoping will read this report and will benefit from the report? Who's your audience?
So our audience is primarily well-informed citizens. We want to give them a strong background on the sales tax and kind of raising up what ideas of what the legislator is currently discussing, the issues that the state legislator is facing. And also our audience is also policymakers in general. Many of the state legislatures, as these are individuals who have full-time jobs and then also do part-time work as state legislators. They often don't have a deep background in many of these areas, and we hope that this report will provide a strong primer as they think about many of these issues going forward.
And you guys are a nonprofit, right?
Right. So we're a nonprofit, nonpartisan, independent research group.
So it's tricky when you come on a show like this and we say, well, what should they do?
Right. Sometimes there's strong data that support a specific option. Other times, like in this case, we outline an array of choices that they have. First of all, when facing decreasing revenue, states can cut services, they can find other sources, they can raise the tax, or they can broaden the base. And then again, when considering broadening the base, we again outline an array of choices that the state really has, either like partial expansion of just expanding to certain industries, similar to what the state did back in the 1950s, or like a full increase of just, you know, moving forward and essentially taxing all products and services.
So we've just got a minute or two left, but I moved to Utah about 20 years ago, and Governor Huntsman was at the helm then. And he simplified or led the effort to simplify income taxes. And I know you guys did a study on income taxes. Essentially, most people are paying a flat 5% on their income. There's exceptions and there's different hurdles. But now we have enough time that's passed to see if that view that Huntsman and the other leaders that agreed with his vision, his vision was let's lower the tax burden on corporations, let's simplify the taxes on individuals that will bring in corporations. Do you think that that's played out the way the legislature had hoped that it would 2 decades ago?
So that's not something we necessarily looked at in our report. There's a lot of economic theorists that kind of propose, you know, if you have this good taxation environment, then you'll attract businesses. And Utah is commonly recognized by Forbes and other magazines as a really good business state. We did do a past report that showed that the reorganization of the income tax did lead to the lowest tax burden on Utahns in the past 20 years, and that was a report we did about 3 or 4 years ago. So it definitely did have an impact on pocketbooks here in Utah.
Christopher Collard, we could talk taxes all day long. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being the spreadsheet whisperer.
Yeah, you bet.
Next time you guys have a report out, we'd love to have you back on.
Thank you.